Hey friends, it's Joe of the Sibling Sit Down. Now I know you're all excited about listening to our Pine Barrens episode, and we're excited to get to it. But first, friend of the show, Nick Norsha, who is a friend of ours, who was a guest on a previous episode and is also a lawyer, was listening to our episode of He Is Risen and called to comment on some of the legal issues that we were discussing about using codes like WAC or POP. Legally, is that enforceable by a jury? Can they prosecute? Well, here's what Nick had to say.
Hi, Sibling Sit Down. Nick Norcia here, a big fan and friend of the pod, as well as an attorney at law. Great job as usual on the He Is Risen episode. However, while listening, I couldn't help but notice my name invoked during the discussion of the Paulie Walnuts line about whacking somebody. As you both pointed out, it was a crowded room with a lot of potential witnesses. The legal question that arose in the podcast, as I understood it, is could a jury convict somebody based on that sort of coded language talking about, quote, whacking somebody, as opposed to more direct language like, hey, let's kill that guy? Short answer is yes, absolutely. A jury could convict on something like that. Whether they would convict is a longer answer, depending on other things that I'll try to keep brief. But basically, as a general matter, a jury can convict using either direct evidence, like a witness saying, I saw him shoot that guy, or circumstantial evidence, like a witness saying, I heard him say he was going to shoot that guy. And a jury could infer things based on ordinary common sense. There's been convictions involving statements that are caught on wiretap or repeated by a cooperating witness where the language used is even more coded and esoteric than something like whack. But as an aid to the jury, the prosecutors could choose to introduce testimony from somebody else in the criminal organization or maybe from an expert witness who could connect the dots and testify what whack would be understood to mean in that context as an aid to the jury. The defense could then argue to keep that testimony out and leave it in the jury's hands as to what the meaning of that word was, and it would ultimately be up to the judge in that case whether it comes in or not. Say, for example, Ralphie died a year or so later at Tony's hands, but under different circumstances that Paulie wasn't involved in. In that case, Mink, Tony's defense lawyer, would likely have a good argument for keeping Paulie's statement out of the trial as too remote and unduly prejudicial. On the other hand, if in an alternate Sopranos universe, Tony took Paulie's advice and killed Ralphie that very night, then the evidence likely would come into the case, as it would be probative of his intent to kill and would likely be quite damning. Assuming it does come in, whether a jury would convict somebody based on a statement like, let's whack this guy, would depend on the other evidence in the case and whether there was enough of it to convince the jury to make the leap that when Paulie said whack, he meant kill, that Tony understood that is what he meant, and most importantly, that they followed through with the plan. To be clear, none of the above should be considered legal advice, and no one should ever consider whacking anyone, except a mole or a doodle. Keep up the good work. My bill's in the mail.
Welcome to the Sibling Sit Down, where brother and sister talk about the beloved New Jersey mafia hit TV show, The Sopranos. I'm Sarah Stefanelli.
And I'm Joseph Stefanelli. We're going to be taking you through The Sopranos one episode at a time, one podcast episode at a time.
We will be discussing season 3, episode 11, Pine Barrens, with a very special guest, Ryan Marr. Welcome.
What's going on, guys? Thank you so much for having me. This has been a long time down the pipeline here. So I'm honored that I got chosen for this episode. Many consider it to be the best one. Definitely the most talked about one, I think. So I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
I think I booked you like episode 11 of season 2 when we were recording that. I said, okay, like in a year from now, we're going to be doing this. Are you?
Yeah, like, yeah, by U.S. mail, no less. A lovely postcard. Most of these podcasts nowadays can't even get a good Instagram graphic. You guys are going U.S. mail. So it's even if I had wanted to say no, I mean, how do you turn that down? You know,
we like to keep it old school, you know. We like it that way.
I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here. I also agree that this is one of the best episodes. I know Joseph disagrees. I'm sure we're going to get into it. But Ryan, how do we know you? Let's go there.
Well, I went to high school with your brother, Joe. And Then it sounds like you went to high school with my sister about seven or 8 years behind us. No, so I'm a stand-up comic. I live in New Jersey. And it's funny because The Sopranos obviously was a hit towards the end of my run in high school with your brother. I was not a huge fan then. I would catch episodes here and there. Back in those days, that was like when the cable companies would run, you know, specials. Like you could get Showtime for, you know, $10 for the next 6 months or HBO. So it was always kind of like that's what my family did. So I would catch episodes here and there, and I wasn't really a fan. And then the, of course, epic finale happened in June of 2007. I was about 7 or 8 months into stand-up comedy, and every comic was talking about The Sopranos on stage, specifically the finale episode. Yeah, really? And, you know, then you had all the hack comics that were doing their impersonations. This is Paulie Walnuts at Jamba Juice. And you'd be like, oh, you know. And I just had no frame of reference, really. So I think I watched the show for the first time, like when HBO On Demand was a thing. So I want to say 2012, 2013. And I probably watched it about straight through. I mean, I'm not like you guys. I know Joe, I can say he talks about rewatching it every year, if I'm not mistaken. Watched it completely through 2 or 3 times, and then I'll just catch an episode here and there. But yeah, this is an epic one we're about to dive into.
Would you say it's the best show? Is it your favorite show?
You know what? I don't know if it's necessarily my favorite. I think it does an excellent job of setting out what it's trying to set out to do. And I think that it's one of those episodes. I mean, again, a super fan like you, you could find something every time you watch that you never noticed before. I think with this episode, there's a lot of things that you can go, oh, okay, I didn't really pick up on that, you know.
Totally.
I don't know. Is it one of those things where if the majority rules? I mean, I think the majority say it is the best one.
Well, I meant the show in general. Do you consider The Sopranos the best TV show? Or?
I think it's definitely a trailblazer. I mean, we wouldn't have the golden age of television if that show did not pave the way. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you have to make the argument that it's at least in the top five. I mean, it's definitely number one as far as changing the game. But yeah, what other show are people really devoting podcasts to or people writing theses about? I mean, yeah, I would say that it probably is up there. If not the one, it's in the top five.
Thanks.
I agree.
It's certainly in my top five. Let's say that this episode.
Yeah, you love this episode. You've always said since we started watching the show, since you watched it a couple years ago, you said Pine Barrens was the best one. I would put it in my top 50. I would not put it in my top 20.
What? Okay. Your top 50, there's only 86 episodes in the whole series, Joseph.
All right, you're right. Top 40. It's in my top 40. When I finally rank it at the end, which Ryan, we plan to do a ranking at the very, very end. Okay. Yeah, I don't.
I'm flustered. I'm a little flustered by that. So Joseph, why don't you give us your episode summary of this episode that you don't really enjoy?
It's not that I don't like. I just don't get the hoopla. Neither does our father, by the way. Our father also does not love this episode.
Let me ask both of you this. Did you guys watch it when it aired originally, both of you? And did you have kind of the same feelings that you have now back then after you watched it the first time? Like, when you watched that first time, Joe, did you go, everyone's talking about this episode. It is what it is. Or is it just now after all the pomp and circumstance, you're like, whatever?
That's a very good question. Sarah, you answer because your answer is going to be shorter.
I was 10. I didn't watch this yet. Right. I watched it as an adult years later.
Do remember it being a big deal, but I didn't really, really start watching The Sopranos like as a weekly show until season 4. Okay. So this would have been one of the last episodes I watched before becoming a real viewer. This is when I was binging it to catch up.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm not going to lie. It probably was a big deal to me because everyone talked about it. But I think it's after my 20 some odd viewings that I've just kind of go. Like, I got to tell you, it's funny. Our last guest was talking about the last episode is such a nice lead into this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is such a nice lead into the next episode, which is one of my favorites. Arma Fu. However the fuck you say it. I like that episode better. But I'm also, Ryan, I don't know about you, I'm a huge Gloria Trillo fan. I love that character. So to me, the best stuff in this episode is Gloria, and the next episode is Gloria.
I love that character too, because I've ruined my life three times over for several women that remind me of her. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's funny. I'm glad I didn't really watch this as much as I did in high school. Like, you know, like I said, I would catch an episode here and there. But yeah, watching The Sopranos modern times as a 40-year-old, and then seeing, okay, this was taking place like late 90s through early to mid 2000s. Yeah. And seeing so many of these characters that, you know, were, again, characters then, but how many of these people we've encountered in New Jersey in our adult lives. And that's an interesting takeaway that I don't think I would have gotten from the show had I followed it in high school. You know, especially like working in nightlife and dealing with, you know, just different people, like you really go, oh, wow, this show was pretty spot on for everything that it was trying to convey.
Ryan, have you dated a Gloria Trillo or two or
or seven? Yeah, it's kind of one of those like old habits die hard, you know, like I like that. Like I like a woman who's going to scream in your face like what? You don't care about my fucking feelings? By the way, do you like London broil? Like that's my kind of. It's
so
a good mix.
Like to
you know
get
what I mean?
Your dinner thrown at you. You're a fan.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Because it's made with love. You know what I mean?
It's made with love. Have you ever had food thrown at you?
No, that I have not.
Well, you're only 40.
you got time.
I've had drinks thrown in my face, but never actual beef thrown at the back of my neck.
Same.
All right, I've never had a drink thrown in my face.
Well, you're a girl. You're have young. You ever thrown a drink?
I don't think so. No.
Well, you're young.
I have time. Okay, cool. Go ahead. Episode summary.
Here we go. All right. In what is considered one of the best episodes of The Sopranos, Meadow discovers Jackie Jr.'s infidelity, leading to a heartbreaking breakup. Meanwhile, Tony's tumultuous relationship with Gloria takes a dark turn, with Dr. Melfi drawing parallels to Tony's mother. In what should have been an easy collection mission, Paulie and Chris face unexpected danger in the snowy Pine Barrens. A scuffle with a Russian, believed to be dead, leaves them lost in the woods. All of their tension comes to a boil just as Tony and Bobby find them and bring them back to reality. This episode aired on May 6, 2001, day before my birthday.
Oh, interesting. We were only a few weeks shy of high school graduation. That may have been our week of the prom.
I think the prom was the weekend of my birthday. So I'm going to say that was May 5th.
Wow. Yeah. No wonder why we weren't watching at the time. We were definitely busy.
I was quite busy that weekend. Yes.
Wait, you didn't have prom on a Saturday.
I don't remember.
We did not back. No way. Prom is always on a weeknight because you have it at a pretty place and it's cheaper.
At the very best, we had it on the Friday.
Okay.
Yeah, we went to Catholic schools when they were still considered elite. It was before the scandals that rocked everything. You know what I mean?
And interesting fact, Ryan, do you remember where our prom was, the senior prom?
The senior prom. I mean, how could I forget it? Because I was just hanging out with somebody last week who got thrown out of it. It was the PNC Art Center.
Yeah. It was the PNC Art Center and that first limo. The first limo was the one that got kicked out of it. Remember?
Yeah. I was just hanging out with a good friend of mine who was a part of that group last week.
We'll leave the names out.
Wait. No, of course. Well, you had prom at PNC. How does that... Am I picturing
There's like a reception
weird?
Center.
Like,
there was. I don't weird. Know if there still is. There's like a wedding venue, like banquet hall that's kind of pushed cool. back. It's in between the music venue and the Vietnam Veterans Memorial.
Cool.
And I don't think anyone ever did it again. I don't think they ever did it there again, or I think we were the only ones.
The year before, we had it in Lakewood, our junior prom, and it was now that's like some kind of convalescent center on Route 9.
Yep. And almost everyone did that around that time. Like all the classes had their prom there, but we, for some reason, got special and we got the PNC Art Center. It's quite a memory.
We were a special class in more ways than one, but
we were.
So our favorite scene of this episode.
Ooh.
Well, I'll make it easy. It's Gloria throwing the Lenda Broyle. I know you two want to talk about Pine Barrens, so.
Well, no, but see, so here's why I mean, and I guess this is what the genius of David Chase in every episode, right? So I grew up, you know, it's funny, Sarah, you just said, oh, I was 10. I wasn't watching this at the time. But like I grew up 7, 8, 9 watching Goodfellas and watching, you know, just that. Well,
hold on. So did I. Hold on. I definitely saw Goodfellas.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. But so like when you watch these mob movies, right, there's always, you know, the scenes that we remember and we glamorize the lifestyle. I don't know. I don't think women necessarily do, but I know men, especially in New Jersey and New York, do. You look at scenes in Goodfellas or The Godfather and you go, I want that life. And then, of course, there's always the downfall at the end. Whereas with this show, The Sopranos, and especially for me, this episode after rewatching it the other night, you see this constant up and down. Especially with Paulie Walnuts. Here's a guy, he's getting his, you know, hands manicured in the beginning. Oh, yeah, let's go with the satin finish. And, you know, Tony calls him up and is like, you got to go pick up, you know, the money. Ah, I got to bring my mother to Social Security. You see in this show that these guys, it's never really glamorous. You may think it is for one scene, but then you're seeing what they go through throughout. And I think that's why this episode strikes so many people, because you see Paulie's insecurity, how useless in the grand scheme of things Christopher really is. And it just kind of weaves all throughout that whole episode. So I don't, it's hard for me to pick a scene. I mean, there's the ketchup packets when they're sitting in the truck.
That's a thing for me. The ketchup packet is
mix everything. It with the relish.
And then when he, later on, when he sees that he has Tic Tacs, and Christopher, he didn't offer Christopher any. That is also everything, too. Those two scenes.
And just the whole, like, throwing Christopher under the bus to Tony. And then, you know, finding out that Christopher knew about it. And, you know, again, like every mob movie, there's that glamorous beginning. You see up to the climax. And then it all comes crashing down. Whereas with this episode, it was just so many highs and lows. And then watching Tony's life unravel with all the gumadas and everything going on. Yeah. It's kind of like that movie Uncut Gems with Adam Sandler that I recently saw. It's just like constant anxiety attack. There's no let up. It's like every scene, you're like, what's going to happen next?
I felt that by watching it this time.
Yeah, I'll pose this one back to you guys. Were there people that you think watching that the first time around thought that Christopher or Paulie were going to die out there? Like, do you think that was a thought when people were watching?
I thought one of them was going to kill the other one.
Okay. Yeah.
Not even die of just being cold. And if they didn't find that truck, is it fair to say, do we all agree they really could have died?
Sure.
Right?
I wouldn't think
assuming the truck, they didn't.
Well, I wouldn't think that truck would have even provided that much shelter. It was just a rusted out shitbox in the middle of the woods.
It's something, though. I don't know. Paulie's foot's not sitting in the snow because they're in the truck.
That's true.
I think it helps more than.
Well, can I get a little English literature-ish?
Sure. Yes.
No, I don't think they would have died. Because, I understand literally they're in the Pine Barrens, but I think in the world of the show, they're not in reality anymore. They're in this outside reality. Reality is Tony. You know, reality is Tony dealing with Gloria and the Russian cousin, whoever he's talking to. But I really think that, like, even the concept, which we're going to eventually talk about, what happened to the Russian, which is the big question of the show. And I say, who gives a shit? Just like David Chase does, because the Russian doesn't matter.
I disagree. Oh, my God.
The Russian doesn't matter.
I totally disagree. I think it's a huge pothole.
They're in Wonderland. They're in the world of Oz. They're in a world they've never been in before. It's this snow covered
Jersey.
How can we be lost like this? We're in fucking New Jersey.
South Jersey.
They're in South Jersey. Even that, the idea that they're in South Jersey to them is so foreign because they never leave that world that Tony is in. And that's why they can't communicate with it. They can't talk to, because, you know, Alice can't talk to her sister in the real world. Dorothy can't talk to Aunt Em unless it's through a glassy little globe. They're in a world that they can't even get out of. And I think that's really what the story is.
Alice has a sister?
Read a book. Read a book.
I've read it. Hold on a second. I've read it and I don't remember her.
I don't know. It's her mother, her sister. Who gives a shit? That's not the point.
Oh, okay. Well, you just told me to read a book because I didn't know there was a sister. I don't think there was a sister.
But no, my nerdy literature answer is no, they can't die. They're going to get back to reality. That's how these stories work.
Okay, so
but they learn something.
I had this moment thinking, is this some symbolic parallel to when Pauly freaked out because Christopher went to hell? And are they in like this weird purgatory state together?
In a lot of ways, yes. I mean, the real parallel is Samuel Beckett's Waiting for Godot. That's what this episode is. It's them. It's two men waiting, having no idea what they're waiting for. And it's a connection to the play, which is an allegory for how we as men and women wait for God. We don't know if he's coming in a form of when we die, if he's just going to come, whatever. However, we wait for God. I mean, even the connection of the shoe. There's a whole big thing in the play is I can't get my shoe to work. My shoe. And he's dealing with his fucking boot in the snow.
If we were trying, we wouldn't have come close.
I lost my shoe.
That's the genius of this show, though, that we can even have these conversations and make it as intellectual as you're making it, because the reality is that when this show aired, there were, you know, brothers from fucking Belleville, New Jersey, having pizza the next night and just being like, oh my God, Pauly almost lost his fucking foot. I thought they were going to have to chop it off. And that's why this show is so many different things to so many different people. But what you're saying makes total sense.
I'm trying to think, do we want to go into Joseph? Do you want to do your favorite scene?
I did. I said it's Gloria throwing the London broil.
You did already?
Really?
My favorite scene is Gloria throwing the London broil.
That surprises me. Why is that your favorite in this? Really? That's your favorite? I mean, it's funny. And listen, one of my favorite quotes, spoiler alert, is when Junior says, have you been eating steak?
But it's not just that scene. It's the lead in. Like, he's sitting there and once again, he gets that phone call and she's finally happy. Like, just like his mother, he works so hard to make her happy and he shows up three hours
late.
And finally sits down and then he has to go and everything unravels for him. Everything, Joe, all the thing. What?
She's a fucking Essex County gutter snipe that is sleeping with a married man. She doesn't. What do you mean he worked so hard to make her happy? Like, what did she expect was going to happen? Like, you know, you're dating a monster who's got a family. Like, he's going to get calls. He's going to get calls and he's going to get up and he leave.
I'm not saying Gloria's right. I'm not defending her, but I'm saying that's what makes her such an interesting character, because you're absolutely right. But she's nuts and he doesn't get it. He is dealing with his mother once again.
Yeah.
And he doesn't fucking get it. How do you not get it? Like, it's just how he's such a smart mobster, but such a dumb man that he doesn't see what's right in front of him. And even Melfi at the end basically is like, do you see? Do you get it? There's like maybe someone you knew? Oh. Like, and part of me watching, is he playing dumb?
No,
or is
I have
he
a question.
That dumb?
Does he get what she's saying at the end? I don't even know if Tony put it together, because it just ends.
I don't think he gets what she says in most of the episodes, but then he'll also love using therapy as the excuse for when things go right. Like, you know, in that same episode where, oh, it's the therapy. But then when it comes to having to actually look inward and make corrections in his own life, he'll never acknowledge anything that Melfi teaches him.
No, he will not. So my favorite scene, I have a tie between two. And I think my runner up has to be when Tony's laughing at Bobby when he walks in with the hunting outfit. Because I just feel like really connected to that. Because if Joseph, if you ever walked in a room looking like that, if anyone in our family did, I think I would be on the ground rolling around laughing. So it's just, I related to that, because he's like, what the hell do you have on?
Do you two know the story behind this?
Behind that specifics, the outfit?
Behind that scene of how that was done?
No.
So Steve Sciarippa did an interview with Entertainment Weekly years ago. Maybe it was the 15th anniversary. He said, James Gandolfini said, listen, you got to make me laugh. I'm very bad at acting like I find something funny. So you got to make me laugh. So we went to the prop guy and said, I want you to find the biggest strap-on dildo that you have.
And they just happened to have.
And he walked in that outfit. And it he's wearing a dildo, a strap-on. And James Gandolfini lost it. And that's the take they took. So, you know, on the off screen, it's him. But the funniest part about that story is Dominic doesn't laugh at all. I mean, Junior is stone faced. How does he not chuckle? Even if he knew in advance, like, listen, I'm going to walk in with his drama. I'm sorry. That man does not smile once in that scene.
And let's not forget the great line. You smell like you've been eating steak.
What have you been eating? Steak?
No. Oh.
Yes, right. So good. It's just so good. But my favorite scene has to be when Meadow, how did she not break up with Jackie when she looked at the Scrabble board and saw all the words? I think that has to be my favorite. When he says, I don't know Spanish, and she says, oblique. I think right there, like, screw him, him cheating on you. Who cares? You should have just been like, you know what? We're probably not a match. And he's just looking at all the words. It says poo at one point. I was cracking up. So I think that's my favorite scene, the oblique scene.
So let me point out, and then I want to hear Ryan's. Maybe I should hold this until we hear Ryan's. But so you're telling me that in the Pine Barrens episode that you think's one of the greatest episodes, my favorite episode is a Glory episode. Your favorite episode's a
scene.
I'm sorry, scene. And your favorite scene is a Meadow scene. Ryan, is maybe your favorite scene a Christopher Pauly scene, or have I proven my point?
No, he said it's the ketchup.
Oh, it's the ketchup. Shit.
Yeah, well, but again, I didn't really pick a favorite scene, but back to Sarah's point, I love, you know, him walking in looking ridiculous like that, Bobby, because He's just that lovable chooch character throughout the whole show. He's one of those guys that, like, he's actually the only guy on that show. And I think we've seen this in a lot of mafia movies, or basically any movies where there's a group of villains, quote unquote. There's always that one character that you're like, oh, why is he involved in this?
Yeah, how did you get involved in this? Right. Like, you don't belong here, Bobby.
Yeah, he's just such a sweetheart of a guy that, you know, you have a hard time picturing him running with that crew. But yeah, the favorite scene, like I said, the desperation that's written all over Paulie and Christopher's faces when they're in that truck. And it's just that real, like, you know, you're not these, you know, tough guys living this glamorous life, you know, and then Christopher just being so dumb. Oh, we should have stopped at Roy Rogers. Like, really? That's what you're worried about? You are stuck in the freezing wilderness.
He's hungry, you know? Dude. He's really hungry.
Yeah.
Wants Roy Rogers.
But I also think Paulie's first mistake is, I don't think you should ever say no when someone says, let's go to Roy Rogers.
No, especially not the one in Bayville where there's still the boogers on the fixins bar. It's perfect. I mean, by all means. I mean, if you're going to South Jersey it up, South Jersey it up, right?
I do love me some Roy Rogers.
Do you consider Bayville South Jersey?
Oh, yeah. Once you pass, actually, Toms River South High School, once you leave that downtown Toms River area, like, you
your
are
border
in.
Is close.
Yeah.
Your border is close to us. Okay. Okay.
I agree with them. I agree with that.
Yeah. Like,
I think that we lived at the beach. That's a different thing than South Jersey.
Well, I grew up in, like, the Brick Point Pleasant area for the most part. Yeah, and then, I have family in Toms River. But, like, when I look at, like, once you see porn shops that are open in 2024 at 2 p.m. with cars outside, you're like, okay, I'm not home anymore.
We're there.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like,
It is close by. I'll give it to you. Yep.
Yeah. You know. Like, when there's parts of your county where you can go and pretend to be from the future, you're like, okay, that's south, you know, that's. And so I think it starts there.
Okay. I like that. I like that a lot. And go ahead.
It blows my mind, though, to realize that, and I only found this out recently, that they didn't actually film in the Pine Barrens. They did it in upstate New York. And the
you're
reason
kidding.
Was.
I yeah, didn't
they
know
weren't.
That.
they weren't even trying to film in the Pine Barrens. They tried for some state park up in Essex County, but some guy who was a politician at the time was like, yeah, we're not going to allow that because the Sopranos are stereotypical against Italians, you know, which I love how people are selective about that. You know, it's like, oh, that's stereotypical against Italians. But if we can get some third string hack quarterback from the Giants, everything's like, hey, forget about it. Like they're very... Everyone's so choosy with their stereotypes.
Very choosy.
And you also know it wasn't supposed to snow.
Oh, I didn't know
there
that.
There was no plans of this episode being in the snow. It just happened when they got there. It snowed that night and they woke up to snow and they said, well, fuck it. They rewrote things and they made it in the snow.
It snows every night in upstate New York. What the fuck did they think was going to happen?
I don't know. But it was so Steve Buscemi directed this. If in case we haven't mentioned that yet, this was Steve Buscemi's first of four episodes he directed. And we know eventually he comes on the show as an amazing character, in my opinion. But he was the one that said, no, we're going to do it. We're doing it. Let's just change it.
There are lines in there. Like, how did they, would Paulie have done the foot thing? Like, was that all written in there? Because a lot of it's around the snow. So
yeah, that's a lot of rewrites.
Yeah. You're dealing with some of the greatest writers in television.
It's amazing. And I it fits so well, the Russian being like, this is nothing to me.
Well, it also
it's perfect. It's perfect.
That also is what makes me kind of think of the Waiting for Godot, because that's really the one thing that doesn't match is Waiting for Godot is not in the snow. In fact, it's Waiting for Godot. The only set piece is a dead fall autumn tree, which if you look, if there was no snow, they'd be surrounded by dead fall autumn trees.
Okay. So
it would actually work amazingly. The snow kind of ruins the metaphor, but I think ultimately makes the episode better. If this didn't have snow, this would be like episode 80 for me.
80, the snow. 86.
It snow brings it. Well, no, the Italy episode is still worse.
I know you really hate that. He really hates that episode.
Oh God.
All right. So our favorite quote. I think this is full of really good quotes. I have a few. Should I say them all?
Why don't you go right ahead, Sarah? You always have a few.
A few. When the Russian says, "Who is it?"
Who's KGB? Open up.
Just a great delivery. Great line. When Melfi is kind of interviewing Tony about the lie. It's predicated on a lie.
Things are going good between me and Calm. You said so yourself.
It's all predicated on a lie.
Predicated on my ass. What's the difference?
Also a great delivery. We've mentioned, what have you been eating, steak? It's amazing.
Yeah.
I think that, so there's, those were all my runner-ups. I have two and I cannot decide because there's a reason. One being, in my household, we quote, how could you be lost in New Jersey? We're in South Jersey. We're in South Jersey. He doesn't even say that, I realize. He says, how can you be lost like this? We're in New Jersey. And then Christopher says, South Jersey. I always yell because we're in South Jersey. That's the line. But Christopher's line saying, captain or no captain, right now we're just two assholes lost in the fucking woods.
Fuck you, Paulie. Captain or no captain, right now we're just two assholes lost in the woods.
I think has to take the prize for me.
That was actually mine.
Such a good, such a good, like, yeah, you are.
But it goes back to what I was saying. I felt like the whole theme of the episode, just that constant up and down where it's like, you know, but to the average person in New Jersey, they would look at somebody like Christopher, right, and be like, oh, man, that guy's got it all. You know, young guy, he's got the hot girlfriend, whatever. But then you see the price that he pays and what he has to give of himself to basically be a bottom of the barrel shitbag that, like you just said, you know, two dickheads lost in the woods. Like, I mean, that I think sums it all up completely. And then even in that finale scene where they're just in the back seat of the car and they're just looking out the window. Like, how pathetic. Like, if they didn't come and get saved, they'd be done. They'd be done for.
Oh, my God.
And by the way, I mean, we haven't got to I'm skipping ahead to theme. That is the theme. It is. I mean, at least unless you have a better one, Sarah, but I mean, Ryan seems to agree. It's life is a big nothing. If you could, whatever you are in the world, it doesn't matter. If you're just an asshole lost in the wood, everything's equal now. How you survive is how you survive. Yeah. It doesn't really matter who you are. So that to me, that's not the quote I picked because I always tend to go a little funnier, but that is the best quote of the show. There's no doubt about it. That's the episode right there.
So I also like the universal remote joke when he first gets into to the apartment and he picks up the universal remote.
The fuck's this?
Universal remote.
Universal remote. Probably wiped your ass barehanded till you came to this country.
While you bring up have you ever seen a universal remote that looked like that?
No, it was like a giant calculator. It was so weird.
It was wild. Was it the first universal remote ever?
I mean, you and I, Sarah, had a lot of remotes in our house. We went through phases where we had 10 or 1.
Yeah.
Never did it look like that. We had to keep it on a docking station.
No, put it back on the fucking docking station.
What the fuck was that?
Oh my God. Joseph, do you have a favorite quote?
I do. It's more of an exchange. You know, there's a few episodes back, we said that the best malapropism of the season was Machiavellian's, whatever the fuck,
Prince Machiavelli. Yeah, Machiavelli.
I was wrong.
You're not going to believe this. He killed 16 Czechoslovakians. Guy was an interior decorator.
His house looked like shit.
That was the
house looked like shit.
That's one of the greatest. That's one of the best of those two. Two characters who had great dialogue. That's just some of the greatest. Because back to what Ryan's saying, how they're both idiots. Paulie making that mistake, I get. But Chris is not that dumb. Like, to me, Chris usually would say, you're a fucking moron. That's not what he said. But even he's like, oh, wow. Oh, he was an interior decorator. That's scary. What the fuck is wrong with you?
That's awesome.
So you two, I agree on your theme. I do have a sub theme to mention.
It's a motif, but go ahead.
No, I don't think it is, though. So I thought about this, and I know you're stupid shit with your motifs, but I think that it is saying something. You say a theme is when it's a thing, but it's commenting on what about that thing, blah, 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 blah. I think it's communication can make or break any life situation.
Sure. I think that is a theme.
I don't think I know it's a motif because obviously they're on the phones and the whole communication is a motif. But this is they're saying something about it, to be fair.
Absolutely. But communication is a part of life. And when you lose communication, it just makes you a bigger asshole in the woods. We all go through a point in our lives where we're assholes in the woods. I'm sure that the first time Ryan got on stage with a microphone and audience, he felt like an asshole lost in the woods. Would that be true?
Well, no. So I actually won this. It happened for me kind of backwards. Like, so I won this open mic competition, which I didn't know was a competition. I just thought I was signing up for an open mic. And I won like 5 weeks in a row. And my prize was getting to open for Jackie the Joke Man Martling. And I remember being so fucking arrogant and cocky because I did like a different 5 minutes each of the rounds that I won this open mic tournament. So that when the owner of the club on the real show was like, oh, yeah, you know, do five. I remember being like, only five. And I went up in front of a paying audience now, much different than an open mic crowd. These were people that paid $40 a ticket, you know. And I just, within 30 seconds, I was like, oh, I'm fucked. Like, I just knew right away, like, I don't have shit. You know, because an open mic audience is usually a little more supportive. It's like family members, girlfriends, wives of the other people performing. This was a paid audience of strangers that were like, we're going to the comedy club. And I didn't have shit. So I had that like my sixth or seventh time on stage. But yeah, I was completely lost in the woods. And you start to question everything. Like, why am I doing this? So absolutely. I think everybody's had that, no matter what they do.
Oh, yeah.
And absolutely. Like Paulie and Christopher, you couldn't phone a friend.
You couldn't
be like, hey, help me. I'm up here. No. You know, I think it's just part of what happens to us is that we lose all form of communication with ourselves, with others. I think, you know, that's all part of it.
Anyone being lost in the woods, that is going to build character. I think everyone should get lost in the woods at least once figuratively in their lives.
There you go. That perfectly sums it up. I couldn't follow that. I couldn't follow that one at all.
That was deep.
But what I wanted to ask you guys was, you know, because you were talking earlier, and I think Sarah agreed with me that it wasn't important, or that it was important, rather. It was a plot hole. Don't you think that these two guys, after what they endured, they watched him get shot in the head. They were stuck in the woods overnight. You don't think it would eat at them to go, what the fuck happened to that guy? He got their car, apparently, and stole their car. Like, don't you think that the two of them, at least one of them, would have been obsessed with, like, finding out where that guy was, looking over their shoulder everywhere they went? Like, so I think that is kind of a plot hole, because I don't believe you just brush that aside and go, oh, yeah, it just happened. You know, like, you shot the fucking guy in the head.
I completely agree with you, and that is my bone to pick with this episode. At the end of that, when Tony says, your ass is on the line when he comes after us, there's no way Paulie wouldn't be like, we got to go back in, except he looks at Christopher, and Christopher's like, Paulie, please, God in heaven, let me go home. And it's like, you know that they're kind of, they had a bonding experience together, obviously, a shared experience together, and they're... But I still don't think it's strong enough for Paulie to go, yeah, let's go home, when he knows that this guy is clearly alive and he's like somewhere. He's going to come get him. I think it's a puzzle.
I just don't understand how it never came full circle. Like you said, I mean, and how did he get out? I'm curious to know. How did he find his way out with a bullet in his head? You know, he wasn't interior decorator.
Spoiler, and I'll go out on a limb here, so we don't do spoilers on this show, but I think this is one I'm gonna let go. We never find out.
You know, we were supposed to, right? There was a scene filmed.
Shut the fuck up. I didn't know that.
There's a scene where, I don't know if it's this season or season four, but Christopher and Tony go back to that office to see Slava. And Christopher catches the eye of a guy sweeping the floor, and it's Valerie. But Valerie and him look at each other, but it's clear that Valerie kind of like, I sort of know who you are, but he doesn't. And when he turns around, he's got a big like gap in his head. And Slava mentions he got hurt. He's brain damaged. Why it got cut, no one knows, but a lot of people speculate because just to piss us off. Because Chase was so tired of hearing about it that he said, fuck it. Just don't even give the audience this because I'm so pissed that people keep bothering me about it.
Oh, well, that's kind of douchey. But I mean, does this scene exist like on a DVD, like, or anywhere? Like a deleted scenes?
I've never seen it.
How do you know this? Did you just make this up?
No, I'm not making it up. No,
How do you know that?
I read a lot about this show. Okay. I don't remember. You want my works cited page? What are you fucking Christine Madsen?
I'm going to start asking for this. Hi, Mrs.
I probably, honestly, you know where I probably heard it was on their other podcast, Sharippas and Imperiolis. I might have heard on that. I don't remember.
Wow.
But that's
I wish I didn't know that.
Sorry.
I kind of wish you never told. I'm kind of upset. Yeah, I'm kind of upset right now.
Well, I'm an asshole now. I don't know.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
I don't have to tell you.
All right.
But that's the story that I've heard. So.
Yeah, okay. I was today years old when I learned that information. I had no idea. That's very interesting.
Oh, you both make very good points. I just think it's an episode that leads. It's over for them. The adventure's over. They learned something. They didn't learn something. Whatever. Who gives a shit? They're done. They just. I understand the obsessiveness, but if I went through what they went through for even 10 minutes, I think I just want to get out of here and go home.
But Paulie's ass is on the line. Tony tells him. He's literally confident. Life or death. Wouldn't you be like? No, I don't think he's confident enough.
Tony's not. What, you think Tony's going to kill Paulie over this?
No, I think Tony's going to let the Russians go after him if that's the case. Because that's what
I don't believe him.
Do you guys think the reason this particular episode gets the accolades that it does is because they left it so open-ended? Do you think that if they did tie it up in a little bow, maybe, I don't know, even a season later, that people would still be talking about this the way that they... do now?
That's such a good point. Well,
as we said, you know, I mean, that would make sense because as we said, we don't do spoilers. And even though the finale is so well known, we've never really said what happens. But yeah. I mean, let's face it. That's an episode that has kept people talking because it's a little open. So it makes sense.
That's such a good point. Right. Is this a such a well-known episode? Because everyone's like, what the fuck happened in the Russian?
But it's I will point out, I think also the season has slowly built this tension between these two characters who Sarah and I have mentioned in previous episodes. They're not really in it. Like, there are so many episodes where we've talked about how good Imperioli is, but yet he's not really in this season until now. And I think maybe we've just been waiting for these two because we love these two.
Yeah,
you know,
so much.
I think it's just a great. Well, here, this brings me to another thing. I think a lot of people have compared this episode to College, you know, the one where he kills the rat.
Mm-hmm.
And they say because it apparently people like one-offs, like they like standalone episodes. Do you consider this a standalone episode?
I think you have to now, knowing that, I mean, you know, it didn't get resolved, but I don't consider it the standalone episode in the same sense that like shows that I loved later on down the line, like The Walking Dead would get like brutal for a while because you'd have four episodes in a row that were like standalones that, and you were like, okay, they're just trying to fill time. I don't feel like this show ever did that, but yeah, it is pretty much a standalone episode. Plus two, because think about it. I mean, when you think of Sopranos, right? Like if you just say it to a casual fan, you're going to think Satriali's, you're going to think, you know, Bada Bing, you're going to think the group, those guys. This was something so embarrassing that Paulie and Chris went through. Like, it's not going to get brought up ever again. And I think that kind of goes back to that finale where they're sitting in the back, pathetic, dejected, humiliated. Like, this isn't something that's just going to come up at the next card game or anything like that. So I guess in that respect, it's a standalone episode. But I wouldn't compare it to, like, standalone episodes of other shows.
Okay. But I think that's fair. But if I sat down and watched this, though, I'd get who Gloria was. I'd get that. Right. I'm trying to think of all the pieces of it. You'd understand what was going on.
But you're thinking of the past. Now let's take this episode out of the run. Think of the two major things that happened. Jackie and Meadow have broken up, which, let's face it, that's the catalyst for everything that's about to happen to Jackie.
Sure. Sure.
And then Gloria and Tony break up. Which, spoiler alert, she ain't gone. So that these two breakups are basically what the next three episodes are about.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not arguing with you. I actually, everyone calls this a standalone episode. But when I was watching, I went, like, if you took as good as College is in season one, if you took that episode out, we would miss nothing.
You'd There's miss Father no Phil and Carmella almost making out.
But you don't. But we don't need that. That
no,
only was character. It's a whole character.
Never needed
episode.
That. Never wanted that. Never needed it. Hated it.
Like, we could skip that episode and go. The plot works perfectly.
Right.
Junior that still was, hates him. This right. episode. If you missed this episode, shit. What you've missed.
Point.
Which is brilliant in the writers, that the writers are able to create a standalone episode that still matters. It's kind of amazing because you're right. We could totally watch this episode for fun. I'm in the mood for The Sopranos. But this is an important episode, which is why I like that other stuff.
Yeah, no, that's fair. So symbolism. I felt like there was a lot.
Sure.
What do you mean, sure? What is that? What was that?
I have a lot, too. I agree with you. I said it's based on Waiting for fucking Godot. You think I don't think there's symbolism in this episode?
Okay, all right, that's fair.
It's fucking trees in the wind. You know how I fucking love trees and weather
love
in this
weather.
Show?
You love weather. You love weather.
The weather in this show is the best.
Show ruined everything, but they said, fuck it, we're going to do it anyway.
Fuck it, we'll do it.
You know, this is where Steve Buscemi got the idea for Fargo, right?
I did not know that.
I am totally joking.
Oh.
I was like, shut the fuck.
Yeah, because Fargo came out, I think, like 95, now that I think about it, right? We're talking about the movie.
That's probably why he said, do it in the snow. He said, Fargo fucking worked. Let's just do it. Anyone got a wood chipper?
Oh my god.
Good movie, by the way. Anyway.
Great movie. Yeah, no, I'm enjoying taking the ride with you two. I mean, for me, like I said, it kept kind of going back to what I said earlier about how you just see throughout this whole thing, how insecure these two guys are. And especially Paulie, it's like, you know, Christopher, you can almost look at with a lot of sympathy because it's a family thing. You know, he's roped in. It's, you know, he doesn't have his dad. Tony is like his, you know, de facto dad in so many ways. And so you can have sympathy for Christopher still at this point a little bit. But Paulie, you just look at like, wow, what a fucking tool, you know, like like Paulie's that old guy that like when you're out, you know, with your buddies or you're out with your girlfriend and you just see him walking into the place and you're like, oh, look at that jerk off. Like that's
Paulie Walnut.
Yeah. And
I have a bone to pick.
Go for it.
A lot of bones.
I have another one. In general, not just this episode. I had this thought. Everyone calls him Paulie Walnuts. How often do they call him Paulie Walnuts and when does it happen?
I think they did it once so far. You're absolutely right.
Isn't
they hardly
that
ever
crazy
that
we all know him as that?
Yes.
Okay, great. I had this realization when I was walking. I was like, no one? Okay, anyway.
By the way, one of my symbols matches what Ryan just said because his hair is symbolic of that. How his hair gets crazier and crazier is symbolic of him losing control.
Paulie.
While Christopher, notice, doesn't. Like Christopher actually kind of stays a little more stable and he looks the same.
He has fucking blood running down his face the whole episode. What are you talking about?
Well, he got hit with a shovel, Sarah. What do you want?
Sure. Right. He was definitely disheveled.
No, but not like Paulie. With the wings.
Oh, yeah. The wings are good.
Which I think the wings got whiter.
They got right, like
as
they were
the episode
just,
went on.
It's amazing.
Could the argument be made though that they were both just too friggin' dumb to know how much trouble they were in? Because like when you still watch that episode, it's like I don't really ever pinpoint like moments. I mean, maybe when Paulie when he does that little makeshift you know, thing for his foot, like that was the only time I really can recall him panicking, like, oh, this is bad.
Yeah.
Like, whereas I think I would have, you know, 20 minutes in, been having full blown panic attack.
Oh,
I agree.
I would have just died of a heart attack.
Oh my God. Okay.
I would have just died.
All right.
All right. Want to go back and forth, Sarah?
Sure. Yes. Gloria looks like an old school gangster in the opening scene. She has a big fur coat on, that hat with the scarf. She just looks like an old school gangster.
I will see that and match you with a trees just being death and decay and just in general the forest symbolizing a place where things happen, very fairy tale-ish, very theatrical of into the woods of like things are going to happen.
Okay, there was a motif of people just being really stupid. Like really stupid, right? So we had this like oblique comment I mentioned. Christopher thinks the Cuban Missile Crisis wasn't real.
Oh, that was great. And you know what? I actually wrote that down in my notes. What was the movie he was referring to? Because he was like, oh, I saw that movie. That was real. What was the...
Oh.
I don't know.
I'm trying to think of what the movie was that he was referring to. And I'm like, was it 13 Days?
I know it too.
And the whole thing, this guy killed the 16 Czechoslovakians and the interior designer we mentioned. There was just this undertone of just really disconnect to things and facts. I think there was a motif here.
I'll piggyback off yours, Sarah, the reference to oblique, not being straightforward. I mean, this whole episode, that word symbolizes the communication in the episode.
The
motif. But no, but even right before, Tony says in therapy with Carmela, we've been communicating better, and it cuts to the word oblique. Like Tony says, we're communicating well, oblique.
Right.
Because we know he's lying.
Yeah, you aren't.
He's lying. Well. He's not being direct. Yeah, yeah.
People having the flu is also another motif.
Yeah.
But there's only really two of them. So I didn't know if it was so, but Meadow and Syl are both sick.
And two important ones. I mean, that without those happening, the plot really doesn't work.
Right. You're right. The plot wouldn't happen.
And fair. I'll throw in, well, it's not the flu, but another disease, glaucoma, causes the third plot to happen. The fact that Karim's mother, father has glaucoma stalls him. So yeah, it's like flu, glaucoma. Those are the three.
Okay.
Chris shooting the deer, kind of very symbolic of the absurdity of life. I mean,
imagine
just being...
you're a deer. Another connection to Joe Pesci. Christopher's got these lines to Joe Pesci. I found it interesting that Pauly keeps wondering aloud why they work with the Russians, and he clearly doesn't respect them as a group, right? But they do draw this parallel to Slava and Tony when Tony walks into Slava's office and his daughter is there and she's studying and she's beautiful and she's young. And Slava says she's destined for, I think, Harvard, but it was an Ivy League school. They draw this parallel to Tony and Meadow, to Slava and his daughter, and that they put them on equal playing grounds. And I found that interesting.
Because we're all the same. Because we're all assholes in the woods.
Because we're all assholes in the woods.
I was just going to point out, too, it seemed to me that Tony had a legit fear of Slava, too, which I don't really recall him ever kind of having that with anybody else that he was encountering. He kind of was much more even keel. His anxiety always seemed to come from family, whether it be his wife, his mother, Gumata. He had legit anxiety. He was worried about, you know, he even has the line. He's like, I could be walking into a fucking buzzsaw. Like he was legit angsty over that meeting.
Yeah. And that gun is focused on. He sees that Slava has a gun.
You see that gun sitting there and it's like not acknowledged for at least a good 40, 45 seconds. And then they zoom in on it. Like they show from Tony's point of view,
Agreed.
Like he's checking it out. And I thought that was interesting too, because I don't really recall off the top of my head ever seeing him be so fearful of having a meeting with anybody before.
Cause they kind of have a valid reason to go after him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%. 100%.
Yeah.
Food and violence. The steak, literally food is the weapon. And it combines your two favorite things. You love food and violence. You love when they grab shit, anything that's in front of them. Literally, she did it.
Love when they grab shit. But Pauly does it too, when they need to wrap his body, the Russian, and he just rips the tapestry off the wall and goes, all right, let's get this body outside. I love when they just use the shit around them. It is hysterical. Which is a mob thing, not a Sopranos thing, I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and my last symbol is the statue at Melfi's office. So Tony's yelling about Gloria and it's on that freaking statue, but it's the top half of the statue. Usually we see him between the legs. And this sets us up for when Melfi kind of suggests that this is Tony's mom and he doesn't get it. But we do see that statue again that we've said many times represents Livia, pretty much watching them over them all, I guess, at this point. Joseph, do you have one?
One is the mayonnaise on Paulie's face. In previous episodes, Tony has always made it clear that mayonnaise represents like a fake Italian. And at this point, it's disrespect. He doesn't see Paulie as a real person, despite the real mobsters, despite the fact that he gave him the option. I think he wanted him to choose.
Yeah.
Let's go after this fucker.
Yeah,
so.
He's his captain. He's being a bad employee right now. He just went through it, you know, but we got to give him grace, I guess. So what does the title mean?
I got nothing other than it takes place in Pine Barrens. Do you?
I got nothing else.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that whole, you know, I mean, that is what it is. And I think that area in itself, which is all the more funny that they didn't actually film it there. But I mean, when you think about everything, especially growing up where we grew up, you know, you hear about the Jersey Devil and you just hear about the nothingness and piney people, which that would have been, as there's even a reference to the Jackson Whites by Bobby, which I don't think they were Pine Barrens. I think, weren't they like up in the mountains of like Ringwood, like way up north? But
I think they were way up north.
Yeah. But it's funny. So it would have been nice if they ran into just like some, you know, piney from Manchester High School or something like that, you know, wander in the woods. Like,
oh my God.
Would have been interesting. But I can't really think of anything deeper than it just being that, just nothingness in the Pine Barrens.
Well, you touched upon it. Are they the Jersey Devils? Is that far? That's far fetched. Okay, we can move on. Our most valuable Goomba. We disagreed, Ryan. You're going to have to choose who wins.
What between Paulie and Christopher?
Well, you're assuming it's Paulie. Yes. I believe it's Paulie.
I'm Christopher.
Well, for the episode, I was going to say it was Tony. I mean, Tony.
Oh, shit.
I mean, because in the beginning.
Why?
Well, because the whole, I mean, we're talking about like who is the most pivotal and I mean, it's him. Yes. I mean, from beginning to end, you're watching him try to keep this all together. He's got the Gumata. He's going to therapy with his wife. In the midst of all this chaos, he's having to have coffee with Carmela's parents over the cancer. Like, it's just, again, that nonstop anxiety attack, the cell phone cutting out. And then in the end, he has to, you know, rally the troops and go and save the day, which he does. And what does he get in the end out of it? It's just another day at the office. That's his life. So I feel like there really is nobody that could be MVP other than him in this particular episode.
That's a great, great argument. I went Christopher, Joseph, probably for similar reasons while you say Paulie.
Yeah.
But I think so. I don't know. I'm kind of convinced on this Tony thing, but they do. But my argument for Christopher is they have each other's backs at the end. And that is important for their relationship. They have a tough relationship. We know this, but at the end of this episode, they're good. They could have killed each other and they didn't. And the shared experience is going to make them closer. Whether that's a good or bad thing for both of them. They're in this together now. And I felt that Christopher won MVP for me, MVG for me.
I'm going to go with Ryan. I actually think he convinced me. Yeah. I'm going to go with Tony.
I think I'm convinced too, honestly.
Oh.
So.
Well, I'm...
well done.
I didn't pick Gloria, though. I didn't pick Gloria.
Yeah. You said you would for every time she was in an episode.
She... I still close. Got her in my heart. She's next.
Yeah. Oh. She's... So our next category, if we pulled this shit, something that made us go, oh my God, that's us. Stopping an AC while down at the Pine Barrens is something, Joseph, you'd be like, oh my God, we're going to be so close to AC. Let's just go. Like that, yeah. That wouldn't even be a question for anyone in our family.
In a heartbeat.
Go to AC. Yeah, go to AC. You're so close. Wow, that was the way their day was supposed to end. Isn't that so sad?
Morton's. Oh, the thought of Morton's like, with a steak sounds fantastic.
You're absolutely
again,
right.
Steak being a motif.
Yeah, for me, it was having secret rendezvous at the Belmar Marina. No, I'm kidding. which I don't think that was actually Belmar Marina that they used. But I always found that interesting that the Stugatz was based out of Belmar. But I'm pretty sure the marina they used was like in Seabright, was it not?
Yes. Yeah,
I think it was like that whole area. I think that's where the house was and things of that nature. But no, it's just that whole thing. Like you said, Atlantic City is even sometimes when I, you know, drive rideshare part time or whatever, like if you wind up in that area, you're like, well, the Borgata is right over there. And
it's I do right have, there. And why not yeah, just
I have some comp dollars at the Hard Rock, you know, stop by the Irish pub, make yeah. it a night. So, yeah, that kind of hit me,
oh,
too.
Man. And any night in Atlantic City is fun, but an unplanned one,
yeah,
like an impromptu AC night is better
than
anything.
But how fucking terrible is that drive back the next morning, though? Like, just, oh, it's the worst drive ever.
I also just, them drinking Diet Coke at dinner. That's like, I feel like that's something the Soprano house wouldn't do. Like that felt wrong. That felt like an ad placement.
Yeah, I didn't
know.
Why,
you disagree with me?
Didn't bother me.
No, we would never drink soda at dinner in our house.
I always did. So no, that didn't strike me.
Joseph,
I know
you
AJ
never,
drinks. No, I would.
Did
I never
not
did.
Grow up in the same house. We never.
No, I never did either. But
you're
I don't.
At
I don't.
Me like that's nuts.
I think. The Sopranos would. Well, we know AJ drinks milk because he always spills it.
He always spills it.
But
and then
I
stares at the wall and doesn't do anything about it.
That
okay.
didn't bother me. That didn't
right.
bother me.
All right. Fucking. Okay, so the fact that Gloria is still in a dress and heels at midnight because she said be here at 9 and that he was 3 hours late. Wouldn't I would be in my pajamas? Why are you still dressed? I would have given up.
I think Ryan can answer this.
Well, because I think, you know, it just adds to that whole, you know, she's got more to complain about when he does show up late. Like, look at what I did for you. I'm looking nice. You know, like she's not going to pack it in and then be in pajamas because then he's going to open the door and walk right the fuck back out.
But she didn't even know if he was going to come at all. I'd be like, I guess I'll go to bed.
You're also putting yourself, I mean, I'm just meeting you tonight. You seem lovely. You're Joe's sister. You're a married woman. You seem like you're happy. This is not a well-adjusted human being, you know? I mean, she's having booty calls with a fat married guy on a boat called the Stugats. So, yeah, she might keep the heels on, you know? Like.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, she might keep the heels on. Okay, thank you. Thank you for that. I feel better now about my bone. That was another bone I had to pick.
What a sweet woman.
Very nice.
This is for our father, who loves our show very much. Mm. When I first watched this episode, I thought it was very weird that Paulie was getting his nails done. I actually thought it was like a, oh, no one would ever know about this. But our father very openly goes with my mother to get his manicures all the time. So yeah. I guess
loves it.
It's just a normal thing. I've gone once with my wife. I did not enjoy it. I don't think I'll ever do it
now,
again.
Is
unless
something
she
that
makes
your dad has done regularly throughout your lives, or is this like a new thing that he recently started doing?
No.
New.
The last what, 5 years?
Yeah. A lot.
Good
the
for
last
him. He's
few
trying
years.
Something new, yeah. You know? Yeah, not
he
wrong
loves
with that.
Going.
He's retired. I'm
he
assuming.
Loves going.
It's the spa treatment. Yes, he is, and it's the spa treatment.
Who's better than
and
him?
It's great. He goes.
Do either of you, know how to start a fire rubbing two sticks together? Because I actually don't think it's true. I don't think you can actually do it.
No, but
you
has anyone ever actually done it?
You're lucky I can start a fire with a lighter.
Yeah. My mom gave me a choice growing up. It was either the Boy Scouts or altar boys. And I'm not much of a camper, so I went with altar boys. But
I was also an altar girl. We have that in common.
So yes. No, I don't know how to build a fire. I've got a Zippo or a Bic and hope for the best.
I've caught this because of our guest, the bear joke, the bear left joke.
One time we went hunting, saw a sign said bear left, so we went home.
We had a family friend, one of my grandfather's very, very good friends who has passed many years ago, was named Fanty. And Fanty, I used to go to his house all the time, and he used to tell that joke too, but it was not a, like, ooh, my dad and I went hunting. It was a very racist joke. At least when I always heard it was a Polish joke. Two Polish guys are walking down the road. That's what I always
heard. That makes it a lot funnier.
Or maybe Fanty was just racist. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. I hope not.
May rest in peace.
It was a different time.
Ryan, are you a huge fan of Denny's? Do you remember fondly Denny's?
Of course. Moons over Miami. I mean, who doesn't?
So Ryan, so we're having some technical difficulties. I'm so sorry, Ryan. But before you go, before you get cut off again, because we keep losing you, any gigs you got coming up for our audience to come see you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram at Ryan Maher Comedy, Ryan Maher Comedy. If you're local in Jersey, I will be at the Ocean View on the Boardwalk in Seaside Heights on Saturday, February 10th. And that's the only local thing coming up. But yeah, check me out on Instagram. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
And you'll come back. You'll come back another time for another episode?
Oh, 100%. This was a lot of fun. Nice to meet you, Sarah. Joe, good seeing you. And I'll definitely be back.
We loved having you on.
Thanks, man. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Ryan. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Take care, guys.
Bye.
So that was Ryan Maher, ladies and gentlemen. We're so sorry, just technical difficulties. We couldn't get him to stay on. Sarah, what was your first and last impression of Ryan Maher?
No, he was great. he was fabulous. I'm so thankful that he came on the show. Ryan, thank you so much. We had a good time. But Joseph, we need to take
And we're going to put his Instagram link in our episode description. Yeah. So please, guys, check out Ryan Maher. I've seen him do stand up many, many times. He is hysterical, really. absolutely love him.
So I was just going to say, we'll take this home, Joseph. It won't be the same, but we'll take it home.
Do you want to talk about the girls' post-breakup, that discussion?
Yeah. I mean, they're all right.
You are better off without him, Meadow. I mean, he was cute. He was really boring.
You didn't know him like I did. You don't know what it's like to grow up where we did.
Whatever, Matt. He was such a drip.
No, he wasn't. He was great.
The two of them are correct. He was a dud. He was good looking, but he was kind of stupid. And Meadow going, you don't know him like I do. Like, no, Meadow, you knew it too. You're crying because they're telling you the truth and you don't like hearing it. You knew he was.
And he was such a drip.
He was such a drip.
Yo, that girl's got a sweet car. I don't know what kind of car that was, but that was a nice car that girl had.
Well, I think she was a great friend because Meadow said, can I borrow your car? And she was like, bitch, we're going to New Jersey. Let's do this. That's a good friend. Keep her around. Yeah.
I agree with you. And welcome back, Caitlin.
Yeah, love a good Caitlin. Love to see her. She was not the mess Meadow was. Yeah. That was good to see.
Very that stable. Nice.
Yeah. Good to see. Okay, so I have a cannoli that I can't say. And I've been trying to figure out how I can say it. And Joseph's the one that told me no. There's something that happens in the woods that's like, wow. That's it. That's all I have to say. I don't know.
Hey, that was really good content. That's really good.
I just feel, I don't know, but it's such a good one. Oh. Go.
Gloria wearing the bandana on her head in the beginning.
Bandana. When I said she looks like an old school gangster, she has a bandana underneath the hat.
Yeah, a future Guma is going to, at a very pivotal moment in their arc, wear the same thing. In fact, it's almost eerie how identical they look when she wears. And I never caught it till this episode.
Love
and
that.
My only other one is, this is the episode where we finally learn that Bobby is an experienced hunter, which will be mentioned quite a bit.
Okay. I don't know why that is a cannoli.
Oh, in a pretty big episode. He's a hunter. Yeah.
It's just not hitting me right now. All right. Anything else? What was in the Christmas gift box that Gloria threw into the water? Because she ends up giving him the thing from Morocco.
And I'll take even some further. Did she buy a second? Was the robe a second gift? Just in case I decide to throw a fucking box out a window.
Or she got him two things for Christmas, but wouldn't you have come with the two separate boxes and like been like, here, it's a two-part gift.
Yeah, I think it's a plot hole.
I think that's ridiculous.
You're worried about where the Russian is.
And I'm worried about what's in the box.
What's in the box? What's in the fucking box?
What do we think was in the box? We can speculate
I'm gonna
wildly.
Think it's the sash for the rope.
No, because she uses that as the ribbon in the gift when she gives him the rope. That's the cute thing. He like takes off the ribbon and she's like laughing because that is like it's the tassel around his waist.
And also, he says to her, I didn't get you anything. And then she says, sure you did. And they have sex as if that's what she wanted for Christmas. What? Why didn't he get her anything? You had this whole discussion with Paulie and Silvio about.
And he said, I don't have to get her anything. Mine's in Morocco. She's her own woman. Ooh. She makes her own money. Yeah, well, I mean, he did say it. That's why. Okay. I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying that's why he didn't get
her.
It's dumb.
The closing music is a song. I don't know how to pronounce it, but in English, it is translates to I am wife and I am scorned. Which fine, that's kind of obvious because even though Carmela's not a major character, we get it. But what's interesting is it will also be the beginning of the next episode. As if it flows right in.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah.
I felt that Pauly getting mad at the Russian, as mad as he did, wasn't truly in his character. It felt very Ralphy. Like getting mad enough to go after him. Like Pauly knows better. That was a Ralphy move where he just like got out of hand and took it. So, you don't give me orders. Like, I don't know if Pauly would have taken that far. I think that was just to get them in the woods together.
Perhaps. I don't think you're necessarily wrong, but I also think the anger he felt that he needs to do this because Silvio couldn't. Like, I think he feels like this is grunt work. It's also worth mentioning that he says, it's interesting you thought of Ralphy because he says, Ralphy is all I fucking hear about now.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why, like, if Ralphy can act like this way, I can act like this.
Okay.
I don't know.
That's
fair. But you're right. You're not wrong. TV Guide claimed this to be the fourth best episode of television in the 21st century.
Okay, but what was 1, 2, and 3 on this list? Do we know?
I don't know.
Wow. I mean, that's really good.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. Christopher just randomly shooting when they didn't even see the Russian. Like the time where he's running around and he hits the deer by mistake. He's just wasting bullets. What if they need those bullets? How many bullets does he have?
I would think a lot because there are a lot of bullets. Think about it. He shoots the deer later and that's a lot of shots. It's not till the very end when Christopher has the same thought you do when he says, what we need the bullets?
Yeah. What, one more time?
What we need the bullets? Which sounds a little like John McClane and like the fourth Die Hard.
Wait, and he said that's like Die Hard shit. In the episode. So meta.
Yeah, that's why they did
so
it.
So meta.
It's not what meta is. I thought this was really interesting, and I tried to find the clip. I only found this in my research. I could not find the clip anywhere. But apparently in the final season, when Alan Taylor wins the Emmy Award for Best Director of a Drama, in his speech, he thanked Steve Buscemi for his work on Pine Barrens.
Why?
I don't know, but it's that's three seasons later.
Yeah.
That's something.
That's random. Did Steve Buscemi get nominated and lost? And that was kind of like a smack to like, he should have won. But that was 3 years prior. Like, don't we move
I on? Don't think he did get nominated for this episode.
I don't know. So. That's my only speculation. Maybe he's super inspired by Pine Barrens.
Well, I mean, Steve Buscemi does become a cast member. So maybe that's part of it. They kind of like.
Oh, okay.
Maybe.
Still weird. There was a lot of referring to Christopher as Tony's nephew.
Yes, I noticed that too.
Multiple times. And like, they don't really say that every 5 seconds in any other episode. That was just an interesting.
But it's pivotal to this episode. He has family. The stakes are high. These aren't just two idiots that are in the woods. He cares.
Sure.
Well, I guess a very interesting question now. So if
they're actually two assholes in the woods, if we're being particular.
If it was Bobby and Pauly, do you think Tony would care as much?
Yeah, I think he would care about Pauly.
You think?
I do. I mean, I do. And okay. Bobby. He takes care of. They have a moment in the car.
They do. A really good moment in the car.
A really nice moment where he says, I wish Junior was my uncle. I mean, you're like, oh, guys, this is really cute. So I think he would go after them. It's the guys in his crew. He needs to care. He can't leave them dying in the woods. He's still Tony's still a guy, a human.
All right. That's fair. I'll give it to you. I watched this scene twice. Carmela's mother, when she comes over with the father about the glaucoma, she comments on Tony's cursing. Does he have to curse like that? They still don't talk to each other.
Okay. Thank you for telling me that.
They do. I'm convinced that I'm never going to see them talk to each other for the rest of the series.
Okay.
It's fascinating.
I love
it.
It
had to be a choice.
I love that for you.
It has to be a choice. Don't let these two talk.
Oops. Okay.
It has to be.
Okay. When it is very scary when Christopher starts laughing, like he's kind of losing his shit in the woods.
Oh.
Yeah. And
it's great.
It's really, really. I'm nervous for Pauly. I think he's going to kill him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's possible. I think it's possible.
I have one more. I have a problem with the girls, Meadow's girlfriends, calling the girl Jackie was with a bitch and a real whore. What? She's like, who are you to Meadow? What did she do wrong? Don't go after the girl. Jackie's in the wrong.
I don't think that they're saying it was her fault. I think they were saying she was a lower class of girl. Like, if you're going to cheat on me, at least cheat on me with someone better than me. Just like she was North Jersey trash is what they were saying.
Leave the girl alone. This was Jackie's fault. He's North Jersey trash.
That's fair. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, that's it for me.
Well, maybe the most important thing that I'm going to say this entire episode.
Oh, wow.
That London broil looked amazing. What a waste.
She worked so hard. She worked so hard on it.
I don't know what goes into making London broil, but I know a good one. That would have tasted fantastic. I would have eaten it off the ground.
I would have picked it up and went, thank you for the to-go meal, and then got in the car.
Fantastic. That actually would have been a great exit if he picked it up and took it with him.
And just ate it, like, just with his hand, like it was a burger in the car.
And then gave half of it to Junior, said, here, I did. Eat here. Here's the other half.
And, oh, my God. Okay. All right.
Pop quiz. Who threw the London broil?
Not Gloria.
Steve Buscemi. They did a bunch of takes where because you have to do it like seven times, and they let a few people do it, but Steve Buscemi's is the one that made the show.
Wait, just like for fun, they did it like that. Like that's a real. Well, because
I think it was they didn't want her, like she's in the scene. You don't let the actress do it because that's you don't make the actor do it and make their hand dirty when it's not necessary.
Wow.
She picked it up and then yeah.
That's amazing. I love that. Yeah, that's a really Steve good Buscemi. Tidbit. Thank you for sharing that.
All right.
You're welcome. All right. Thanks to our listeners for analyzing Pine Barrens with us. Thank you to our guest, comedian Ryan Morrigan. And that's all from us for now. We'll talk to you soon when we discuss our next episode, season 3, episode 12, Amour Fou, with special guest. We're welcoming back Becca Riley. This has been The Sibling Sit Down. Thanks for listening to The Sibling Sit Down. Please remember to like or follow the show on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. So you never forget about it.